Welcome to the Week in IndyCar and the Marshall Pro Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires and supported this month by Bell Racing Helmets USA. I am so happy to have my friend Ricardo Juncos on, your first time here on the podcast. Look, I realize I'm impartial when I'm doing my job as a part of the media. I don't really consider my podcast a part of my day-to-day job. This is my little passion project, so I don't mind coming straight out saying, you know, I love what you do, Ricardo. I love the fact that your story of coming here and making what you've made for yourself, it has to be one of the most inspiring stories in IndyCar, in motor racing in general. But let's maybe start there, because maybe not everyone knows that you aren't an Argentinian billionaire just coming here spending your father's money playing with race cars. For those who don't know your story, tell us about how you got to where you are here sitting in Indianapolis Motor Speedway as an entrant for the Indy 500.
It's been kind of crazy to believe. I still don't get it, to be honest. It's pure honesty. We're coming for a poor, very small family with not much money when I was a kid. My grandfather has some, but they lost everything, 1980, 1981. So I was growing with very, very humil, small house in Buenos Aires, in Argentina, with no money whatsoever. To be here today, of course, it just blew my mind sometimes, and I don't want to think much because I don't want to lose the momentum.
Of course.
We start from the beginning very, very, very low in Argentina, Buenos Aires, when I left my home when I was 17 years old, just because I want to become a race car driver. And I don't know how. And I had no idea, but that was in my mind. And that's it. And I fight, actually, with my father. I fought and then said, you know what? You go. And he said to me, life is not as easy as you believe it is.
Wow.
And I didn't like that, but that gave me even more power. We're still very good friends, and actually he's here.
He came to see us.
But the truth is that I was about to turn 18 when I show up in one of my friend's mother's house. I sleep in a sofa in Buenos Aires. That was 1994. With nothing on it. No money, no nothing. Actually, no good relationship at that time with my dad.
Wow.
But we are six brothers. I mean, four boys and two girls, and no much money anyway in the family, so no much he can do for me. And that's how I start. And I built my career as a driver there. I found my sponsors. I went to racing schools. I built my own shop. I started with my brother in 1996 through 2001, actually, before I came. And a street car shop. So we built... we repair cars, service and engine service and brake service, whatever, right? And that's how we make our money, and we burn all the money in racing.
Yeah,
when I was the driver.
That's a wonderful tradition in any family.
Exactly, and then obviously I raced from like 1997 to 2001, and I put maybe six times or seven times only new set of tires in all these years. That's how bad we were, and no money. I built my own engine, my own car. I did my own setup, and I, you know, never pay a mechanic because we have a group of friends that they go for free because they are the passion, right? But we learn the most. That's how you learn the most. It was a lot of sacrifice and suffer because the results were not there. At the same time, without knowing, thanks God today, I went through those situations because teach you something that you will never learn otherwise. So, long story short, I became a race car driver there, Formula Renault, 1300, 2000, prototypes, 2 years of prototypes, and then we lost everything. The country collapsed, we lost the business, we lost everything. The last 4 or 5 months, we just sell tools and sell whatever we had to keep eating.
You sold everything you had?
Yes, everything. So, we collapsed. And then that's when the United States, the USA, dream or option became, because actually I ran out of option. That's the true story.
Wow.
I came to Miami with a friend of mine that I never saw in 7 years by that time. So I called him. I said, I find out he was in Miami. My friend Daniel, I said, Daniel, this is Ricky. We're Ricky Juncos. Yeah, man, how are you doing? And it's difficult because you don't see someone in 7 years.
You wonder why they're calling.
Yeah, it's not fair. It's not good. And he said, came for 2 weeks and stay in my house. That's what I did.
Wow.
And $400 from my grandmother because I was afraid to cross immigration and they're going to ask me how much money do you have. I say, well,
sure.
Nothing. you know, at least $400.
Yeah,
so that's
yeah.
everything. And I had to send back to my grandmother.
Wow.
And that's how I started in the U.S. to May 2002, actually, 15 years ago. 16 years ago now.
Well, it's just phenomenal to think that you have this passion. You have to go out on your own without family support, build something successful, lose it all. Have to, I mean, again, when you're... I've had to sell tools before when things got a little bit tight, but that I know, at least from my own experience, that tells you that things are getting low, right? You cannot be happy in life when you're having to sell the things that you actually make your living with. And to come here and thank goodness for your grandmother helping you with that money, but again, you had to send it back. That wasn't to keep. Tell me about landing in Miami. You're obviously, you might not have seen your friend in 7 years. That's a heck of a friend.
I know.
Regardless,
he's coming this weekend.
Oh,
by
that's
the way.
Awesome.
He's the guy actually opened the door the first time. Daniel, he's coming Saturday.
Oh, that's amazing. Yes. So tell me about what you find in Florida and how you start to rebuild this dream.
Obviously we came with a totally different country. Like, it's hard to explain.
We're crazy here. It's okay. You can
say
that.
No. We are crazy there.
Well, that's why we like each other.
But the language was a big barrier. I didn't speak any English at all. Nothing. No money without knowing anybody. My friend is an electrician, so not even in racing. And I want to continue as a race car driver. That was my goal, my target. I never want to give up that dream. Never. So it was not my decision to stop racing, to be honest. And here I am. But so I found a country with the arms open like this,
wow.
you know, to say welcome. And I remember I had three careers. So I get my H-1B visa approved through Christian Fittipaldi, partner Andre Martins, and that was Advanced Karting Racing Team. So they hired me first. I found an interview with them. And I remember they don't have the position for me. So I said, I work for free. Don't know how to pay me. 2 weeks, and I asked them, give me 2 weeks. And I remember the team manager there said, but we're not going to pay you, Ricardo. You know this, right?
Yeah.
No problem. 2 weeks, I'm fine. And 1 week went by, and they pay me. And then 3 months later, I was hired there. I worked for Nelson Philippe, actually, personal mechanic for him and his brother. I learned a lot because they hired Christian Boudon at the time, who was at that time at Tony Car Factory. So I was learning massively on the go-kart world, being with these people. So I was lucky already. Not from the money side, but how much I was learning. So because of that, gave me the opportunity to start learning the English, making some money, and learn a lot on the go-kart side. Because I didn't have that in Argentina. I knew about race cars, but not much about go-karts. Then the time goes by, Nelson Felipe is out, go to a Skip Barber. So then Christian and Andre Martins offered me to become the team manager. And I said yes.
Wow.
And that was huge because gave me the opportunity to see the other side. No more mechanics, just be the leader, deal with the drivers and the customers and my mechanics. So I hired the people, I decide how much to pay. And I was only maybe 7 months in this country. So it was still difficult, obviously, the communication.
Sure.
I was actually one of my mechanics to translate all the time.
But they've obviously seen in a short amount of time that your abilities and aptitude are one that in a short amount of time they can keep throwing more and more at you, and you can take that and do positive things.
I guess so. And then I remember with some customers, some drivers in the team said, Ricardo, you have to open your team. I said, well, no, I'm not even speaking English yet. I mean, no, I had no money. It's crazy. And they pushed me, and I was not sure about it. And I just was too much to take. The system, the country, the people, the whole thing is so much different and takes time to, even today, 16 years later,
yeah.
I still, wow, this something surprise you, at least for me, because we are so different in our country. But I did that, I listened to them, and one go-kart driver came to me, 8 years old, Sebastian Ordóñez, and I spent all the money I saved at that moment. September 2003, we opened Junco Racing, with the same logo, same that I have in Argentina.
Wow.
And this driver, this kid, the father, keep his word and was with me. Second driver, Spencer Pigot.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Let me jump in here real quick and mention that, again, thanks to our friends at Bell Racing Helmets USA, our podcast this month is being supported by them. If you are in town here for the Indy 500, we do have coming up Sunday, please stop by their brand new shop in Speedway. It's just right over the corner here as you drive in through the main entrance. Lovely little place. Spent some time there. It's air conditioned. Big thumbs up for that. Bell being synonymous with safety, innovation, performance, and engineering excellence. They are trusted by more champion drivers than any other brand. Spencer happens to be one of them. Smart kid. Another reason we like him. So if you do get a chance, stop in to the new Bell store on Main Street to get some merchandise and check out their new facility. So, Ricardo, we're going to come back to more of your story, and we might even end up, when we get some additional time, doing an entire podcast just on that, because I think there's so much that IndyCar, IMSA, there's so many series that can learn from you and realize that, holy cow, someone like a Ricardo who came here truly, like, you know, so many stories of American history, coming from somewhere with nothing but a dream, and refusing to let that dream die and turning it into something, that is, yeah, there's just a lot for folks to take and appreciate and realize that if a major racing series is willing to look at those like yourself who are going to fight to make something, it never hurts to say, hey, well, how can we be a part of that journey? Not we're going to fund it and we're going to pay for you to be here, but what can we do to help get you here? Maybe that's a good direction for us to take next before we get into what you're doing with the Juncos Racing Team and Kyle Kaiser to prepare for Sunday's race. When we spoke last year, when you were getting ready to make your debut in IndyCar here at the Indy 500, you did mention that Jay Fry and IndyCar was trying to be as helpful as they could. Not just, oh, nice of you to show up, but we hear you might want to be here. What can we do within our limits to help in any way, shape, or form? What was that process like?
And exactly like that. I mean, and they keep doing this. And I felt that support or help. And I think probably without knowing this or without paying attention much, my story can be an inspiration for someone.
Yeah.
And actually, IndyCar is the best propaganda, I mean, for them, because this is the road to India, and I came from nothing, and I get up here. So if I do it, someone else can do it too. So I think it's just good for everybody, not just for my own team and my own guys, actually, because you can be a mechanic and then an engineer and then grow and maybe go to someone else. But it's been great. I felt really, really good here. Like a home, somehow. I had connections. I feel good connections with the people at the IndyCar level, like Miles, Fry, Doug Bowles in the IMS, and many others, which obviously that gave me an extra power, an extra confidence. I always go by my feelings, so I don't need to, you know, to have the proper plan,
sure,
sign it and make sure this is going to happen and this is going to succeed. I risk a lot, and I don't mind. I always go by my own passion, desire, and I'm not worried about failing at all. It's not in my mind whatsoever. I think if I thought about it, if I think about what I'm doing, sometimes I will go slower. But great support from IndyCar. I said last year, and this year is the same thing. Here we are, you know, adding more races. And I said even the first time, my goal is to become a full-time IndyCar team, and I don't know when or how. But somehow it's happening, so very, very pleased.
Well, let's talk about this. So you're not just in the race this year, Ricardo. You're in the race strong. This Kyle Kaiser kid, another similar to Spencer Pigot, who didn't just come with you for IndyCar. He has been a part of, I guess we'd have to call it the Junco system, you know, your own ladder. You might be a part of the Mazda Road Indy ladder, but even within your team, you develop young talent to bring them up to where they are. Tell me about how things have gone this year compared to last year. I mean, I know, looking at the timesheets and how we can assume some things, but what are things like internally with that second year of experience? Are things smoother? Are you still being surprised by some things as you're getting ready for the race?
To be honest, last year was a massive experience for me. A lot of things I thought I knew how it's going to be before you even do it. And I was right in many of those things. But you need to do double check. You got to go through and then say, yes, I knew this is going to be this way in order to make a change.
Sure.
And I always said that I want to put my system in place, which is very different for what I see so far in IndyCar. And I'm doing for this year a little bit of that. Not everything I want yet because we're running out of time and we have just enough time and people to do few things. But few things we change on the IndyCar team for this year compared to last one. And that's some of the system that we have in Pro Mazda and Indy Lights and some of the system that we developed during the years. And that's how we took all the good and bad and my original ideas and applied to this year. And the fact that we're doing one car is much easier than do two. It's never easier, but it's better. Less complicated, so we can focus. But I learned these 2 weeks, I think I learned more than the last year.
Really?
Yes.
So what are those areas that you're even looking at now where you're saying, aha, this is going to help me even more next year or the year later? Because it is a bit of a step-by-step journey.
I think the fact that I'm brand new and I have no old inputs or experience is maybe an advantage. Even now, the whole car is different. So, I mean, all the aero package, but makes maybe 80% of the car totally different.
Sure.
And because I come in with my ideas, and I never copy anybody. I try to build my own system, and I do my own things, regardless if they're good or bad, and then we fix it. I'm the person that, if I have a setup sheet from your car, I don't even want to see it, because it's like cheating myself. I need to beat you my own way. And because I'm not doing this for the money or for... It's just for me, for my people.
It's weird. I love that approach. Yeah, that isn't one... There's some people who would give anything to go next to the garage next door to get that information.
No, you will never see anybody from my team. Anybody. And I promise that now. That is going to be watching or taking pictures. So try to get an information from someone who actually asked or steal a sheet of setups, because... It's like, you know, you're cheating. If you play chess with your son, you're not going to cheat. You don't cheat yourself. I mean, as a human being.
Yeah.
That's my approach always. And then that's why you go. And who cares the results? Who cares?
Let's talk a little bit about Kyle Kaiser, who isn't a big personality like a Hinch or an Elio. So I don't think the average reporter here, to be honest, could probably pick him out in a crowd. And I don't mean that in a negative way against Kyle, just not everybody is,
Sure.
Heck of a race car driver, though, Indy Lights champion. Tell some of the folks who might not know Kyle Kaiser that well, the athlete, the performing race car driver, what is it that you see in him that gives you inspiration that he can be more and become a star?
I think he's The personality, everybody's different. I think he has a quiet personality, very humble. And I said this even before. He's still the same after being a champion than before he was a champion. And few people are that way. Even employees, you are a mechanic, and certainly you became a team manager.
I've never been a champion, so I've always been an idiot. So people just know I'm the same.
But you see, even in the paddock, someone just became a team manager and they just walk different. I don't like that. You should be you, regardless. And that's what I'm doing too, myself. Last weekend in Indy GP, I was helping my brother with the gearbox until 3 in the morning, and I had the 3 teams. I don't care if I'm a team owner of IndyCar now. Nothing changed for me. I don't care. And Kyle is the same way, and I like that. He's the same person, regardless any result. But I agree with you. The people doesn't know him because he has a quiet personality. He does the things for him, for the people around, and to do something right on life. I always think that, you know, Da Vinci was painting pictures not to sell for $1 million. He was doing that just for him, because that's what he likes. Years later, his art was selling for millions of dollars. But that was a result, a consequence of something. So this is the same thing. We work as a team for the love of the sport, and we do the things the best we can for ourselves. If later on the years, our values worth millions of dollars, same with Kyle Kaiser situation, great. who don't want to make money, of course. And I see Kyle's personality a lot like mine. We are just lower profile. We don't talk much, but he has a great charismatic personality when you get to know him. He speaks very good.
He's a great kid.
He's a great driver, too, because obviously, like you said, he won the Indy Lights Championship, and now he's doing a very, very good job. So eventually, with the years, all the reporters will know who Kyle Kaiser is, for sure.
Let's talk about one last thing about your team before moving to some other wider topics. We have a six-car Andretti Autosport team, Penske with four, Schmidt with four. We've got a bunch of big teams. We don't have very many single-car programs this year. We've got a couple of, I think, very few Indy-only, right? We've got Dryden Reinbold that's here. This is the only thing they have planned. Normally, when we're looking at the Indy 500 and we're saying, who's going to be the ones kicking butt, who are going to be the ones towards the bottom, we move all those five, six monster teams up top. We just, in our minds, move a small one-car team, two-car team, Indy-only, towards the bottom. This year is further proof of how stupid I am. Tell us a little bit about, whether you want to call it punching above your weight or, the David and Goliath syndrome. But I love when a team like yours, because I, for most of my IndyCar career, worked for smaller teams, I have that complex, Ricardo. I don't want to be the big team. I'd rather be the small one who's surprising people. What do you feel like? Do you appreciate the fact that you are surprising people in your second year and punching above what idiots like me think would be the natural order?
No, I think, to be honest, I don't think much on that. And we came to this weekend, the whole team, because I meet with them, with wide open mind. Like, no pre-assumption. No, we're not going to assume something will be this way. We're just going to play as a go. And I have people with experience in the team, of course.
Sure.
Darren Krause, the team manager, Tom Brown, engineer, with a lot of experience. And I ask them so many questions every an hour. Like, they're tired of me, probably.
Shut up. The
stupid question, I don't care. I always ask. And even I said, stupid question, did you guys check this? I say, yeah, Ricardo. Did you guys do this? Why are we doing this? And I say, and they look at me like sometimes, well, I don't know. I ask. But I'm learning. I'm learning quickly. I quickly learn. So we do this for the best we can. That's it. And without focusing on the outcome. And the outcome put us now P17. Great, of course. I never expect that, to be honest, whatsoever. I was so worried to make the race on Friday. I couldn't sleep last night. That night on Friday, I couldn't sleep at all. So I have a lot of stomach pain. I wake up. I said, this is not even health. That's beyond the sport. I was like in crisis. I said, I never expect. I knew how difficult it's going to be, but I never experienced that sensation before, that actually moment that was happening.
Because last year wasn't a big concern.
Exactly.
Wasn't a big worry.
Exactly.
Now that we have bumping.
There you go. So it's something that I never experienced before.
So now you know next year when you come back, we have bumping, a lot of alcohol Friday night, make it all go away.
But I wake up like 3, 4 in the morning. I couldn't sleep. So I just wake up. I sit down on the bed and start thinking, what am I going to react? How am I going to react? And what am I going to say if we're not making the race?
Wow.
Because I want to be proactive. Because if we're making everything is happy, funny, that's easy. The words coming easy to your mouth, right? But if you're struggling, and let's say we face the situation that we are not in the race, how are we going to do it?
That's fascinating.
Okay, so I start thinking, how am I going to approach that moment with my guys? Because all the effort we put on it, with the sponsor, with the driver, with his parents, with even Dan Andersen. I don't know. I mean, everybody's going to ask questions. Huge group of people from Argentina coming this today or tomorrow, for this race. And imagine if you're not here. We are not there. All these situations happen, right? And I knew I had confidence on the last sessions. And I can see the faces of my guys worried because they thought I was worried. And I was the one saying, we are okay. We are okay. Because in 7 hours every day, what I learned here, the minute the car is fast, sometimes the track is so much faster, but the car is actually worse, and you confuse yourself.
It's a false.
Or vice versa.
Yeah.
So that's the key. And I knew that on Tuesday. That's it. That was a massive learning, because last year I was not much more involved like this year. with the engineer and everything. And we're struggling big time until Friday morning. We had good moments and then bad moments. And I didn't know how much was real or not, those moments, because then you compared yourself to a lap time that was set probably from someone 2 hours ago. But they are in the garage now. Yeah, they are not running. So what does that mean? The track is better, worse, or so sensitive, this car also. You see how tight everything is. Which is more challenge now. It's a more race car mechanically than aerodynamics, which I like better.
Of course.
Because we can put more input now. And I trust myself. We have confidence in what we're doing and how much we know. And I feel so much power. That not means we're going to get in the race, because that's why I also worry. But we calm down on Friday, and that said, we take it easy. We was patient. And then here we are 21st, and we start the race, and that was also a different experience, because I was, the emotions were so high, because I was so worried to not even be in the race. And to be honest, that I think was even more than last year. Yes. That's how much intense was for me.
So let's talk about that. Let's move into bumping. That's obviously still the biggest topic coming out of last weekend. General expectation, it might be a new team that hadn't been here before. Carlin was one that I read many times, folks saying, oh, I think Carlin's going to be the one. They're new. They've never done this before. Could it be Danica? She hasn't been in an Indy car forever. Could it be Kyle Kaiser? Could it be Pippa? You know, there were some names suggested where you go, you hate to see any of that happen for anybody, but I never saw someone say, oh, Hinchcliffe. Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah. One of the leading drivers in the series. He's definitely going to be gone. But his odds of going home were just as good as yours or anyone else's. I mean, there were 35 Absolutely. Equal chances.
100% right, yeah.
Knowing that, and it is still fascinating for me to think that you woke up just having to run through the scenario of if we didn't qualify while everyone else was still asleep. What are your thoughts now, having gone through the possibility of bumping, and now seeing that one of IndyCar's biggest names, probably its biggest name now, since the Honda commercials are coast to coast with Hinch in them, what are your thoughts? Do you think IndyCar should let everybody who enters participate? Do you believe they told us 33, so you have to make it on merit? What do you think?
To be honest, I think to analyze this, we should think not just at this particular moment or last year or this particular moment that IndyCar is going through. Because I think a lot of progression, I think we're going up the hill now. Mm. And I believe in 3, 4, 5 years from today, IndyCar is going to be so much better and bigger. And everybody wants that, and I think will happen. I think. And I hope I'm right. But and if we think that way, and now we are 40 cars or 45 cars, then you are, at least, if you don't make it, you're not the only one. This situation was particular because you know so many teams like me, if we don't make it, was game over for me probably.
Yeah.
That's it. But, and that's bad for me. But IndyCar, 102 years of history. Penske name. Roger Penske is there. Why I should expect to be hit to be that easy for me?
You willfully took the risk entering this race, knowing there was a chance that you might not make it.
And that was more chance than never. That was more chance than actually being the race. But we just keep pushing, and we just try to be smart and be patient and calm and try to understand the situations. Everything goes so fast. And I was actually even Saturday morning getting clarification of the rules by Mark Miles, because I don't even understand the rules yet.
We're still trying to figure them out on qualifying.
But that's what is being the tradition, and we still in the same track. The yard of Brickyard is there. Mm-hmm. IndyCar, the oldest and most big and powerful event in the sport in the history of human being. Why we want to change that at the same time? So we have to be careful. If these things go up the hill and beat out of the 500 is part of the equation, is everybody understand that, even a sponsor understand that. If that situation happened in the future with maybe 5, 7 cars going home, won't be that bad, I believe. As probably today it is. But because it used to be different. It used to be an assumption that you're in because it was not even 33 cars. We was making effort to put the 33. So everybody relaxed and became... But now, when I think about it, that I'm in as well in the race, the relief is like, is huge. So all everything is paid off now. And actually, now the result of the race is what it is, right? Doesn't matter much because you're already in the race. Just to be in, and if we grow, and next year more cars coming, and if we became 40 cars for the 500 or more, and 7 or 8 gotta go home, the fact that you're in the race is huge.
Yes.
And I think that's part of the tradition. And if we're going to do the tradition, let's keep it the whole way. Don't do tradition, just the big yard, which is still there, and the oval track, but not this. And I think IndyCar is more that way. And that's why I think it's going to be good compared to Formula One, for example, because they're breaking the tradition now. Now it's about the machine. Anybody can drive. So they compensate the talent with the technology. And I think it's a big problem. I think IndyCar is like Formula One 20, 25 years ago, where the fans can be next to the drivers and the cars.
Yeah.
And that's tradition as well. In Formula One, you have to be a billionaire just to be in the paddock. Otherwise, you are not good enough for us.
Sure.
You go to the stands. So it's a huge division. It's like a communism country. I don't like that. You go to Formula One, if you don't have the wallet to be there, you cannot. In IndyCar, it's not. Everybody's welcome. Everybody can be next to the driver, next to the car. That's huge. It's great.
But
so
you,
if
you
we
like
don't
the
lose
fact that you earn, yeah, that it's merit. It's on quality.
So let's keep the
quality.
Tradition. And if the tradition is only 33, let's keep it. But in the future, we need to work with the sponsor to make sure they understand the game. And if we get out of the race and we like Hinchcliffe now and Pipa Man situation, let's get stronger for next year. So then you use the negativity to be back even better. And maybe it's a good thing.
Had one team principal mention he thinks IndyCar should consider guaranteeing Indy 500 entries, starting spots for full-time entrants, which is, it's not too dissimilar from NASCAR with their charter system. It's not too dissimilar from when the Indy Racing League took over here in 1997, when they had the 25-8 rule, where the first 25 spots in the grid were reserved for full-time or committed IRL teams. The other 8 were for everyone else showing up. And I was mentioning to you before we started recording, that was my first Indy 500, my team's first Indy 500. I was an assistant engineer there and assistant team manager, and we were in that group trying to get into the 8, and damn near had mental breakdowns, because back then we had 2 weeks of qualifying. We, I think, would have ended up qualifying 7th or 8th on the first day on Saturday, which would have been amazing as a new team. I don't remember who, but we didn't put enough fuel in the car, and our driver Greg Ray finished his first 3 laps. Didn't finish his 4th, ran out of fuel. Normally, when I tell a story like that, I'm the idiot that made that mistake. The rare occasion, I wasn't the guy to do that this time, but we didn't complete our run, therefore didn't get our time. And back then, different than today, you had a maximum of 3 attempts per chassis. And if you didn't get in with that chassis, you had to find another one. We didn't have much money, so we only had 1. So we burned our first opportunity on the first day of qualifying, first weekend. Second day of qualifying, blew our motor. And so here we are, not only not qualifying first weekend as a new team, trying to get into this field of only 8 positions made available, but we now are going to have to wait till the following weekend, and we only have 1 shot left. And we were low on money. Motor itself, if I'm remembering correctly, we didn't get a motor until late, might have even been late Saturday. I don't think we even got out, but effectively it was Sunday, bump day. So our one and only time to go out and qualify was our last chance with that car. We had no other options. If we didn't make it in, we were done. And I believe we qualified 30th. But that entire week, Ricardo, we were sweating bullets, just crawling out of our skin. And then we found out that, oh, well, IndyCars or IRL has decided to let in Lynn St. James and Johnny Unser. So we're actually going to start 35 cars this year. So I can at least speak to the feeling of being one of the smaller teams having to fight your way in against teams, 25 teams that were guaranteed, and to then find out that effectively we were sweating bullets for no reason. Do you have any thoughts on if IndyCar were to go to a system that says, hey, if we want to give you an incentive to be a full-time entrant, and if you do sign up for the full season, you'll get a leader circle and a guaranteed starting spot in the Indy 500. Do you like that idea, or does that go against your sensibilities?
I think I don't like that idea because I could, for example, in my situation, I couldn't do it. I can't. And any billionaire can become a team owner and just put the money to be in and secure. If I'm not full-time, it's not because I don't want to.
Yeah, yeah.
It's because I can't. I'm trying to. So when you put these type of rules, if you are full-time and you have all these benefits or this securance, this secure, you save that issue with money. So I'm out of the equation because I don't have the money.
Mm.
I cannot guarantee you there. So I think we have to be careful. I mean, why I wouldn't expect to be in IndyCar and to be easy? Just because I can buy a car and it's the same car and I can't expect to win? It's no way. Well, it's not fair for Roger. If you go to Formula One and you expect to win against Ferrari, when you see the history of Enzo Ferrari and Colin Chapman, even Frank Williams, there's a huge effort behind back on the day.
Sure.
They sacrificed their life. And now they are here. Why is it going to be that easy for us? Because we had the money to get in? No. Should be the same. And that's what I'm doing. That not means I'm going to survive. Maybe I collapse and maybe I fail. Who cares? It's life. You try it. I'm not saying I'm not guarantee I'm going to be in and I'm going to become full-time and find my sponsors. But I don't agree to make it easy. I don't. I mean, this does. If this is became so easy, well, what is the value of IndyCar then? Should be difficult because it's the best in the world, and to get there should be difficult, and requires to be special. Requires to succeed against others, like a race car driver on the race. We doing the same thing as a team. A mechanic inside the team. You have to be a good mechanic, and then an engineer, and then you eventually became a team manager. But it's all about your standards, your ability to succeed.
Mm.
And that's going to raise the game, I think.
You're listening to The Week in IndyCar on the Marshall Pruitt Podcast with one of IndyCar's great truth tellers, Ricardo Juncos. Ricardo, we also had probably the most unfortunate timing for a press conference and press release ever. I've asked my friends at IndyCar why. 30 minutes before the start of qualifying on Saturday, they announced their new engine regulations for 2021. Meanwhile, everyone here was essentially focused on qualifying and ready to cover that. They drop a massive piece of news, so, you know, we'll give them a pass for that. Hopefully they learn the timing bit a bit better. But give me some of your thoughts about what IndyCar is wanting to do here in a few years by bringing in more power, new 2.4 liter twin turbo V6 starting in 2021. They're aiming for roughly 900 horsepower to start, and they've mapped out a plan with Chevy and Honda and the other manufacturers I've spoken to who aren't here yet that this plan through 2026 is intended to get to 1,000 horsepower. So according to Jay Fry, they actually started at the destination of 1,000 horsepower, then worked backwards with the manufacturers on how to get there. Do you like the idea? Have you heard anything about possible costs or otherwise of what's coming? What's your thoughts about big power?
I like, of course, the idea about big power. And I think, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, and I don't want to talk much sometimes because I'm the new one. I'm the younger, the new one, and what I should be talking if you have some others that can speak with more authority than me, which is fine. I think what I will look the same way I'm looking myself with my team. We're doing this as a sport. That's it. It's not a business for me. It's a sport. It's a complex and complicated technological sport. We compete against each other to win. And because it's a sport, we want to have the best possible sport. So horsepower on the car, more horsepower, will become more difficult to drive. So then the difference between one driver to another, the talented driver, will be better. Or you can see the difference. So that's what I'm saying. Technology to the safety I'm the first one to raise the hands. Technology to level the driver's knot. We don't need it. Inside the engine, the bodywork, the fans doesn't know what it is. Mm. What is inside? Doesn't matter. It's a sport. They want to see the cars driving by the drivers, fighting for a position, and that's a sport. Who's better than the others? And which team is better to put a better race car? So bringing more horsepower to the IndyCar will be more difficult to drive. Good luck. I like it. It's going to be more difficult to tune up. The more challenge you get to tune up the car, the more open rules you have, the better, because the team can make a difference over the others.
Sure.
If you have a skip barber class, that's even, that's for school drivers. That's a different. But if you became that way, it's not good, in my opinion.
Let's move to one final question I'll pose to you where you are an authority to speak on, and that is Indy Lights. I know it hurts your soul and it hurts my soul to see single-digit entries this year. You're obviously running your Pro Mazda champion, the kid who I call Victorious Franzoni, in Indy Lights, having won the Mazda Road to Indy Scholarship to graduate. I tell you, if the Andretti Autosport Indy Lights transporters got lost on the way to an Indy Lights race, I mean, you could count them on one hand. Thankfully, we still have you. We still have Bilardi and such. There are still committed team owners. The other maybe big question that is building just below, obviously, the IndyCar topic is, what can Indy Lights do to increase its car counts? As someone who's produced champions in Indy Lights, who's running the Indy Lights champion in IndyCar, is running the Pro Mazda champ in Indy Lights this year, if you had a chance to offer some suggestions on how to get the numbers up, where would we start?
Well, it's a big problem. It's a complicated situation. I think it's too late now, to be fair honest. I think it's a consequence of many little things doing in the wrong way, in my opinion.
Okay.
And I don't want to point any fingers, because I think it's everybody's fault, even team owners. I'm the one who speak all the time. I'm not afraid to speak, but maybe I should speak more, or maybe more, because we are all together in this. So if now we have this problem, I think it's everybody's problem. I don't think it's an easy solution now. It's going to be a painful solution, I think. And you need to get to the bottom with a bad situation to realize how bad things were, and then to make something better or change the whole thing and make it better again. I have no questions that IndyCar needs Indy Lights. Indy Lights is part of IndyCar. If you count how many drivers are in IndyCar that pass through Indy Lights,
it's most of the grid in some way.
And if you have a solid, my original thinking when I get after 2014 to Indy Lights, this is great. The perfect car, race car. And I thought, okay, we're going to have Linus drivers, because IndyCar is going up. Everybody wants to be in IndyCar. But it's not happening.
Mm.
So I don't think it's one issue. It's many issues.
Is
combinations.
Cost, where does cost play? Because that's one thing I've heard, whether it's spare parts prices to the costs of fuel. You know, I've heard mentioned that there are, you know, 10, maybe 15 parts, components on an Indy Lights car that the same components on an Indy car are actually cheaper. Fuel, for example, putting a gallon of fuel in your Indy Lights car is more expensive than putting a gallon into your Indy car. I mean, do you think it's strictly cost? Is it promotion?
I what I can tell you is that in the situation Indy Lights was, and even Pro Mazda, you have to cut as much as possible the cost to the minimum. That's for sure. You do that for 1, 2, 3 years to recover, and then you can do whatever you want if you have already 30 cars. But if you don't do that, it's a big problem, because you play in a risk game. The numbers were higher 2015 because it was a new car. Okay, and I charge more money 2015 than 14 than 16 than 17 and now.
Wow.
So I'm going lower big time because I don't have an option. And I think every team is doing the same thing. And we have even less drivers now. So, but the fact is, there is so many components. And I don't have the answer for that. There is so many components on the Indy Lights, expensive, more expensive than the Indy car. And so many components on the Pro Mazda car that are expensive than the Indy Lights, for consequences, are more expensive than Indy car. Why? That's no question for me. But that's obviously not helping, because when you crash with Pro Mazda, and then you have to sign a send an invoice to a father that needs to pay crash damage, and they're coming from Europe, when they use the same race car, and they ask why is this much? I say, that's the price. You have to pay me.
Yeah.
And I collect crash damage deposits, so I collect the money ahead of time, but he generates a huge problem. That's a matter of the total value, because, you know, if you work for me as a mechanic and I decide to pay you $100 a day, and you said to me, but how much everybody pay? No, $100, I pay you $100. And a week later, you find out the same mechanic, same position, and someone else is making $200.
Mm.
How that guy is going to feel? Even if he doesn't need the money. Like in this situation, I'm dealing with parents. They have the money. Doesn't matter for them if it's $1 million, $2 million, $500. They don't care. They don't want to get screwed. They don't want to feel that you're lying to them. They don't want to feel. And that's the point. And that's why everything collapsed.
You raise a great point that maybe, again, some folks aren't aware of. In IndyCar, this is big boy, big girl game, right? Big money, fully professional. On the Mazda Road to Indy, any junior open wheel category, or even, you know, sports cars, little, you know, Miatas and whatnot, there's a huge amount of trust involved in doing deals, because what you often have are parents bringing some money, all the money. You know, father, mother owns a business, has some money they can spend to help their son or daughter race. But just like that son or daughter is new, or, you know, learning a little bit as they're coming up the ladder, parents are doing the same thing. They don't know. They're not veteran IndyCar folks. They're having to learn this field, learn what we're doing. And so you raise a great point, the trust that when you say it costs $1 million $1 million to do this, and then they find out that maybe some other team is out, would, after doing a deal with you, they find out that, oh, that next team owner over is charging $700 or whatever the number is. There's an immense trust, because you get a lot of parents and young drivers saying, we want to get into this world, we don't know it, but we're trusting you, and they want to know that they're getting honest answers. That isn't always
the case.
That's
the biggest problem motor racing have today. Because nobody knows exactly that. They don't know.
It's a free market.
Exactly.
I mean, people can
charge
what they
want.
If
you put in front of me right now of you 10 pianists playing piano, and you ask me which one are the best one, I don't know. All looks the same for me. But if Pavarotti is listening, he will say, no, this is the best one because of all these reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
Parents are the same. I can say whatever I want to them. They will trust me. They don't know. I can say any lies I want just to make them feel.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what is going on and more and more and more, because it's a huge business. It's expensive business. So then the most common things when I'm dealing with parents and drivers from all over the globe, it's not just Americans, Americans, Europe, they don't trust, because they've been screwed one time already. So they don't trust. So you need to gain your trust. So the problem we have is trust, because first, that's what I'm saying, is many issues. Is actually the race car itself. When you put components, for example, we all know the problem we have in the Pro Mazda with reliability of the components and stuff like that. So if you miss a race and a kid lost a weekend because for any reason, and we understand racing, things can happen, but can happen within some limits.
Yeah, yeah.
So when this get out of control, it's so difficult to turn around that mentality. And it's not about the money. It's about they lost the trust. They think we are, I don't want to use it the word lying, or we are not treating properly. Or they lost this confidence. They lost this trust. And I think it's some of the reasons, as many others, in my opinion. But I think you have to be proactive. If you do something and you choose a group of people to work in a project, and after 2 years everything is wrong and collapsing, and then, oh, yes, didn't work, let's change it. Well, sometimes it's too late. You have to be proactive. And that's why it's everybody's fault, because we, as a one, as a whole, we got to get together with a proper plan and go for it with a common sense plan on the table, you know?
I look forward to that plan coming, Ricardo. Let's move to our favorite part of the week in IndyCar and get to some listener Q&A. I'm going to do something a little bit different this week. What we normally do, Ricardo, when we start the questions, I go back to my favorite question from the previous week and from the week in IndyCar, and I picked my favorite question, and my friends at TorontoMotorsports.com, they're the ones that do all the Hinch cartoons and the one of me and Robin, because we're all living cartoon characters. They send off really nice either Marshall Pro Podcast t-shirt or some other swag. Someone asked Jack Harvey, who would he select as members of the Millennium Falcon if he was Han Solo, because Jack's a big Star Wars fan. So I'm going to send in, we're going to connect with that person there and ask them to send in whether they want a t-shirt or a mug or something like that from our friends at Toronto Motorsports. But yeah, we always get great questions, but we're going to have to give that one a big thumbs up this time. Let's start off with Gabe Argenta, who asks, Ricardo, do you have any good stories from your experience running a Miata at the SCCA National Runoffs last year at the Speedway? I love seeing those photos. I'm like, there's my boy. He's an IndyCar T-motor, but he's here at the SCCA Runoffs.
I built a spec Miata. I started building my car 2011. I finished the car around 2014, and I drove it for maybe 6 times. In these 7 years. That's all 8 years.
Wow.
Because I never had time. But and I used to have the car in Miami, so I raced in FARA, Homestead, Miami Speedway for fun a few times. And it's a spec Miata. We built it with the regulation to be a spec Miata. And it's a tough category. It's very difficult. It's a lot of drivers, and a lot of drivers are doing that for so many years. So some of them are old guys like me. I'm 43, and I used to be in the Formula Arena when I was 20, but I'm not anymore. And I race against drivers in Argentina that some of them get to Formula One, like Fontana or others. So the level there is good. So I know what means a good level. And I'm telling you, the Spec Miata,
brutal,
is a good level. If you put any top 15, top 20 Mazda drivers, Mazda Spec Miata drivers, in any car, proper race car, they will surprise you.
Wow.
Because they are good, and that's my opinion. They're very good. So knowing that the runoff is going to be in Indianapolis for the first time, actually.
I mean.
And I'm here. So I bring the car. We prep the car. And I went there and with my son, actually, because I don't want to distract. I'm never going to do something for me personal that is going to affect the team. So all the team in the lights from Mazda, they just keep working. Obviously, everybody came for the race. I was just me, my son, and sometimes Ernie.
Yeah.
My tech guy came and helped me, and that's it. That's the way we did it. Such a fun. We have issues, and actually it was quite fast. In the practice, I think I wouldn't qualify maybe between P15 and P20, to be honest. But then on qualifying, I broke the gearbox. And then when we changed the gearbox for the race, the carburation that we did on the car that we couldn't test because I brought the gearbox was way off. So I cannot even put a 60 gear on the straightaway, and I was so slow on the race. But that's okay. That's no problem. And that was a great experience. I mean, driving as a race car driver on Indianapolis.
I know.
For that week, I was just me, a race car driver. I never thought about the team anymore. The Pro Mazda, I did nothing. I was just focused here with my son. He has the radio, and that's it. That's how we did it. And it was a good experience. I mean, I think for him as well. He's 12, he was 11 last year. And great experience for him because we had this activity, which is kind of crazy. So our personal life as a family, anybody that's motor racing knows what I'm talking about. It's just different than the standard families. And sometimes the wife or the kids suffer more than you think they suffer.
Yeah.
So I know that. And I try to put myself in them and do things in a little bit way as well to make sure they get some good experience in life as well.
Well, if the runoffs come back here in a couple of years when your son's driving age, I think we need a Junco's father and son entry. I'll talk to Herta. We'll see if we can get a Herta father and son entry. We'll get some fun going here for sure. All right, Adam Smith, who I always appreciate the questions you send in, Adam. He said, this one's for you, Marshall. Could Schmidt Peterson Motorsports buy out a Chevy entry, put Wickens in it, and then put Hinchcliffe in Wickens' car? I know you guys talked about the difficulties it would be for Hinch to swap engine manufacturers. Could this be a way to circumvent that problem? I would say, maybe, but I don't have Wiccan's contract in front of me. I'll ask, but, you know, somehow I don't think he's going to provide it. But knowing that the Schmidt team and therefore their drivers very heavily tied to Honda, we know that Hinch at least is tied very directly as well to Honda Canada. Again, there's a couple leaps of assumption here, Adam, but I don't know if Wickens would be someone that Honda said, sure, go over to a Chevy just so we can put our other guy in one. I would not see Honda Performance Development or American Honda giving that idea a thumbs up. What about you, Ricardo?
I don't think so, but we go back to the same thing. I think it's a tradition of the sport. You take it. If you go to the soccer world, if the World Cup is coming up now in a month, and United States is not there. They didn't qualify. Chile and South America, they were American champions, and they didn't qualify. But a World Cup in soccer is huge. The whole country is out. Yeah. Imagine how much people are crying.
I know.
And this is the same thing. Game over. Roger Penske was out years ago, and nothing happened with them. Look how much power they have today. So it's part of this life. It's part of the sport. The only thing you need to do is just, if I was in that situation, I would be crying like crazy in my house. And I would be here talking to you saying, how am I going to learn from this? And next year I will be in. I think it's part of life.
The thing I'll mention, Adam, and I didn't mention this in the outset probably because it fell out of my brain, but I had a conversation with someone yesterday on Pit Lane. Wasn't someone from the Schmidt-Peterson team, but I'll just describe them as someone being in the know. And they told me that from what they have heard, that Aero Electronics made it very clear that they do not want to buy their way into the race. That they, and I think this is very admirable, Ricardo, that they, as a company, said, that doesn't fit our core values. We realize this is competition. As we mentioned at the outset, 35 entries had an equal chance of getting in. And again, from what I was told, the folks at Aero accepted this and said, hey, this is the worst, but we're here as a member of IndyCar. And that's another thing that I like, that mindset, Ricardo, of, oh, we're not just a big company that parachutes in, does some promotions, and then goes away. No, we're looking at this like a member of the IndyCar community. We didn't earn our way in, therefore we shouldn't buy our way in. And the other thing that I've heard too, Adam, and this is again on fairly good authority, so we're effectively saying here, James Hinchcliffe is not going to be in the Indy 500, although I know the team heard from a colleague at the media tour today where Hinch was at New York that the team is still saying, at least officially, that they're exploring all options. But again, that's their prerogative. Have heard that Aero as well will have expanded logos on the two Schmidt cars that they directly own in Robert Wickens and also Jay Howard, and also the Schmidt Peterson Meyer Shank affiliated car, that the three of them will carry larger Aero branding just to try and make up for some of the loss of having one dedicated car. So I'm not telling you, Adam, this is 100%, but at least from who I heard it from, I'd put it at a solid 99. So barring some crazy thing I haven't heard about that none of us can figure out who would hop out of a car, I can't think of any way that James Hinchcliffe is part of the Indy 500. And again, provided everything's accurate on Aero, good on them.
I agree. I agree with that approach.
That's very impressive.
Yes.
Adam also has a follow-up question for you. He says, Ricardo, how busy are you during race day? Is there a big difference in race day activity for a team when you jump to IndyCar from the lower levels, or is it roughly the same?
It's about the same approach on the technical side, to be honest, but IndyCar obviously requires three times the people or more.
Yeah.
And I'm fascinated by the telemetry, the fact that we can see telemetry live. I knew yesterday, for example, on the last run, outing, we make a change, and you can see one lap in, I knew the car was better. That's it. And I told the guy, this is better. He's going to like it. Because I see the data. I see the steering wheel. I can see the throttle. And four or five laps later, Kyle came in and said, I like it. You can see that. And I'm fascinated for that. So you're doing more things. Obviously, you are active. I'm not doing a specific role other than sometimes I got to pull the gun holes.
Yeah,
or put the lollipop because we don't have enough people.
It's nice they give you a job on Thursday. Yeah.
But I just observing
and
be part. I ask all these questions, like I said before, I ask the stupid question probably, but I want to learn as much as I can. But yes, it's a lot of things going on the timing stand and when the car is running.
Well, let's move down to some of the other questions that have come in here. And I love the fact that we've had so many people send in questions for you, Ricardo. And I also realize that you do have a business to run, some other things to do, so we're not going to keep you here all day long. But let's look through some more here. Interesting. Andy Brumbaugh asks, if someone wanted to start their own ladder series team, how best to get started, meaning financially? He said the overhead of a startup to get a transporter, cars, equipment, it's a very tough barrier to entry. How do you raise a capital before even turning a wheel with customers?
I mean,
it's bank not, robbery, right?
Yes. It's not the way I did it, so it's totally different. I didn't build my – I mean, actually, I don't have money. Everything I have, I just reinvest on the team. And it's difficult because you can – be a business owner now, nothing to do with racing, and you became a billionaire, and now you decide to open a racing team, and you have all the money to do it, but you don't have the experience.
Mm.
So even then, it's still very difficult. Unfortunately, it's very difficult. So it requires so many years to learn how to interact with the mechanics, how they're going to work, who's going to do what. And that's massive, so important, the group of people that you're going to use to build the team. So I was lucky to start so slow. And like I mentioned before, all the circumstances that I went through and the difficulty. So my perception of the business today, of the racing team today, will be a little bit different. If I didn't have all this experience, and I'm the same human being, but without all this experience, and you give me $100 million to build a racing team, we will collapse. I guarantee that because it's just so difficult. Just the money cannot buy it. And even sometimes you see big teams, they don't know how to make it through because they don't know.
Yeah.
So then they need to hire a team manager and some mechanics. They're supposed to be the right ones. After 1 year or two seasons, you got to change it. And now you go in this direction and then in that direction. And then it's difficult.
I forgot to mention this in my in our Day at Indy podcast yesterday. And it fits with what you just mentioned, Ricardo. I asked a driver on pit lane how things going, right? This is before the session started yesterday. Not going to say who it was, obviously. It was the best line. It was so good I had to type it into my phone because I didn't want to forget it. I said, hey, how are things going? And he said, oh, it's great. Our team morale is great. Everybody hates everybody. You know, he just threw up his hands like, I mean, but that is sometimes what you get. Even if you have all the money in the world, you don't hire the right people, or you might have most of the right people, but all you need is one agitator or one whatever, and you can spoil the whole thing.
It's true. And money is obviously the biggest thing, because with money you can keep going. It's just about how much you're willing to spend. If you are a billionaire, you just keep going, you keep going. Or, like teams in Formula One, they just buy a whole team, and they just became someone with hundreds of millions of dollars. So that's another way to do it. But
I mean, I think the other thing, Andy, that you know Ricardo's mentioned and I've seen happen many times is if you're working in the lower categories, the lower formulas, it might even be club racing. You might be a local prep shop running Formula Fords or sedans or something for somebody. It might be that father that says, hey, my son, I think, has talent. I'd like them to go somewhere further in the sport. Can, you know, we work with you? It's quite often one of those scenarios where you get that lucky knock on the door or a phone call where someone places trust in you, and maybe that's the mechanism for you to be able to buy the transporter or the bigger things. But just right out of the gate, if you want to do that, experience is a huge part.
It's everything. Even in this country, because then you can, like, we build this shop, and I don't have the money to build it. I get a credit. So you get the money there. Obviously, to run the team is difficult. You know what is going to give you a credit just to run a driver.
Yeah.
Of course.
Can I have money to play race car, please? Thank you, Mr. Bank.
But the experience became, for me, I think, the most important thing that is going to make you success or succeed.
Max Radke, another great question for you. It says, Ricardo, you've been working with multiple drivers to have your car in the grid for all the races so far this year. What is your goal moving forward? Do you expect more of the same next year with multiple drivers? Or do you think you might be able to focus on one driver in a car for the whole year? And he also mentioned something that I've told you more than once. The livery on your vehicle is beautiful and unique. Thanks for the splash of color.
I don't know. We've been working with a lot of drivers. I'm doing a lot. This year has been, it's going to be probably the most intense year by far. Because last year we did only the 500.
Yeah.
This year we ran in the three teams, IndyCar, almost full time. I have to be careful. So I cannot predict what's going to happen, but I will say my intentions are to keep growing on IndyCar as much and as fast as possible. The ultimate goal will be to have two cars next year full time. I don't know how, but that will be an ideal situation. And if that's the case, I need to really think about the whole team because it just requires a lot of effort. And I'm not doing this for the as a business or for just for that. So if I have three teams, I have to be in all three at the action time.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to have Promazda, for example, and I stay home or because I suffer. Otherwise, why am I going to have it?
Yeah.
So I, in the process to think a little bit of how Hunger Racing will continue, to be honest.
I don't know how you're sitting here without like a 48-ounce thing of espresso to keep you going because, seriously, you're just in constant movement between all your teams. But again, as you just said, you wouldn't have them if you didn't love them and you didn't want that. Let's see. This is I actually really like this question, Michael Wallace, and this one might be mostly for me. He says, with road relevance generally being the reason to go racing, what does IndyCar offer to Chevrolet and Honda that maybe their sports car racing programs don't? And then there's a secondary question about what IndyCar can offer other manufacturers to come and play in the series. It's an interesting one, Michael. I would refer to IndyCar for any manufacturer as a halo series. And the halo thing kind of takes it out of that road relevance construct. Now, when Chevy got in and they announced late 2010 maybe that they were coming in for 2012. They definitely said the small displacement 2.2 liter turbo direct injected. They have road car models that are approximately that same size with that technology, so it fit. Honda, similar thing. Both manufacturers have mentioned, continue to mention that as the years have gone on with the same engine architecture, we're what, like year seven now, whatever it is, there's not so much of that anymore, but it has become a great process to train engineers, right? Ricardo, as you see your engine techs come in, often they will take, bring folks in from the road car side, learn something here, bring it back to the engineering department. So there's some good technology transfer there. I'll maybe offer this, though, Michael, as an answer a little bit out of left field. And these numbers aren't exact, but if I write an IndyCar story, of something that, you know, the average person would want to read and write the similar equivalent about IMSA. Let's say I write one about Chevy and what they've done, and it's something about IndyCar and Cadillac and their IMSA DPI program. We're talking multiples of traffic differences. And it's not because IMSA isn't awesome. I love it. I cover both series full time, Ricardo. It's just in terms of audience size and interest. IndyCar's on the rise, as you mentioned. IMSA's also on the rise. IMSA just has a much longer distance to travel. So if you think about it, even from a commercial standpoint, any road car manufacturers that have a performance model, you almost guarantee they're going to be in sports car racing because they know, look, we can have the road car version sitting next to a race car version, direct link. It feeds the brand that you got to do it. But then you look here to a place like IndyCar and realize that, yeah, looking at your number 32 Juncos Racing Chevy, you put that next to a Camaro, you go, I don't see any similarity. But there are a lot more people looking at your number 32 car than they would in a sports car series. So just keep in mind there's more eyeballs, and manufacturers are obviously in the business of selling to those eyeballs. So they're going to get more here, but I have to admit, it wasn't always that way. You know, there was a point in the 80s where IMSA was right there, even the early 90s with IndyCar, and I would love it if it was the same, if it was equal. You know, having a disparity of value, definitely, I don't think that's a good thing for anyone. Well, let's pick through a few more questions here, and then we're going to let Ricardo get back to his day job. Let's see. Justin Brockwell asks, since you've stepped up to IndyCar, have you noticed any more fan support for your team? Do you feel appreciated now as being part of IndyCar? And he also said he appreciates you joining the series and is thrilled that you easily qualified for this year's 500. Best of luck on Sunday and have fun out there.
Well, thank you, Justin. Yes, obviously IndyCar is so big, so now probably I'm more recognized than before. In the ambient, everybody knew me anyway, but probably in Argentina, South America now is huge because we're making history, for at least for my country, just qualifying 17. Last year was the first time a team owner from Argentina in the 500, and now starting 17 is another record. But yes, it's, you know, I was actually walking during, you know, back and forth from Gasoline Alley, and people say, "Hey, Mr. Juncos," and I signed a couple autograph, which never happened before.
Look at that.
I guess it's part of being became an IndyCar owner. So
I mean, you know, whenever you walk by, Robin and I boo and yell, but it's nice that, you know, it's nice that there are other people who are happy when you come by. All right, well, let's go over to Twitter, you know, and I was hoping that this would happen. Although I am from California and Spanish is somewhere between our second language or our first language, I was hoping we would have a Spanish language question. For those who speak your native tongue, can I ask you to take the question from Carlos Villalobos?
Well, Carlos Villalobos, ask...
And you do it in Spanish too, if it's all, whatever you prefer.
Piensa que hay una posibilidad de llevar IndyCar a Potrero de los Funes, por ejemplo. Es una pista de Argentina. He asked, obviously, the English version as well. Does any possibility to take IndyCar to Potrero de los Funes, but in Argentina?
Uh-huh.
Potrero
de los Funes is a... That's a great question, because
yes,
I know you
question.
Would love...
Of course, as an Argentinian, I would love to have IndyCar there, right? Actually, in 1971, they went there and Alan Sr. won that race. So we'll be IndyCar back in Argentina if that happens. For Carlos' questions, I think that Argentina has a lot of tracks, a lot of racetracks that IndyCar can go and compete. More than Potrero de los Funes is actually a great track. They built this track for Formula One, as another one to Termas de Rio Hondo and Buenos Aires racetrack as well. But our country, Argentina, is been with big problems, economy-wise, and safety, and many, many others in the last probably 20 years, or 15 for sure. So it's a difficult scenario. Obviously, if the opportunity happens to be real, I will sit down with IndyCar and say, listen, guys, this is an option. But at the moment, I don't see that happening, to be fair honest, in the next at least 2-3 years.
Let's close on a question, which I think is fantastic, from Matt Odland. And I apologize if it's Odland and I just murdered your last name, Matt. Ricardo, what have you learned on your journey to becoming an IndyCar owner that you would like to share with other potential new owners in the series? And what would you like to have known before becoming an owner yourself? That's kind of good, a pay-it-forward type question. For those who might be looking in, what advice would you share? Other than be a billionaire.
Yes, I mean, of course, IndyCar is, and it's okay to be that expensive. Actually, it's not that expensive. In my opinion, it's
those
not.
Those words have never been
I know.
Spoken.
Think about it. It is expensive, of course, for any standard family human being. But when you think in a football or quarterback or basketball or baseball, how much these players make a year as a salary?
Yeah.
And you put all together in one team a year. How many millions are those? Either they are making too much money, or then IndyCar is not that much. When you compare IndyCar compared to NASCAR, for example, top teams, or Formula One, it's not that much.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
If you think about it, what a Tom Brady or LeBron James earns per in 1 year, I mean, an average Indy, if you want to be truly front-running competitive in IndyCar, you're spending Well, there's no limit to what you can spend, but your minimum six, seven, eight is a place where folks get really comfortable. You can do it for less, obviously, but for, I'm talking about truly competitive. But if you think about if, I don't know what Tom Brady makes per year, if it's $20 million, you can run almost a three-car IndyCar team and employ 50, 70, 80 people to do that.
That's
if
my
you're
point.
LeBron earns in one season more than what it takes to run one full-time NASCAR Monster Energy Series entry with hundreds of employees.
And that's my point. And it's fine that he made that money. Good for him. But either
I want to become friends with him, by the way.
But either that is too much, or actually IndyCar, as you said, the full season entrance for $8 million is not that much, actually. And that's, I think, what's going to save IndyCar, because the new car as a sport, the racing are spectacular.
You've got McLaren thinking about coming here.
Exactly, because
you know
they
how
have
much
to.
They spend in Formula One, and they're seeing value here.
It's just one small mistake for McLaren that they're making a lot, actually, unfortunately, in the last 2-3 years, can cost $50 million. For them, it's nothing to be here. And how many McLarens they can sell here on the street, or Ferraris, or anybody? So I don't know why there is no two red IndyCars with Ferrari logos on it, really.
Yeah,
because
the
money, and this is the Indianapolis 500, is part of the championship. So that's why I believe, and I'm 100% confident, that IndyCar is in the right way, right path, and this is going to be fine. And then probably the teams, I don't think we will became like 20 years ago when it was when the cigarette companies in the cars, where that was a good deal. And then the sport is going to go even better, because then the teams has the money to hire the best drivers. You don't need to wait for drivers that bring in the money, which sometimes you need to say yes to drivers that are not at that level. And now you raise the game of the sport. And I think we are going to that way.
Ricardo Juncos, you're a pleasure, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Not only am I thankful for you taking time out of a busy week where you're getting ready for the Indy 500, but I hope my listeners who maybe hadn't heard as much from you as I'd hoped realize that you are a great, great value and member of our community here.
It's a pleasure.